morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff with my co-host, Mr. Tony D. Viss. Mr. Viss, how are you doing this fine Wednesday early evening?
Doing well. The finish line is in sight. We got one more day with students tomorrow, and it's about 80 degrees out, little breeze. I don't know if the weather gets a whole lot better. So, yeah, it's doing well. How are things in the big Omaha?
It is good. I think we've gone 2 days in a row without rain, which is great. The bad thing is I have to put in a new part of our, or not I, we have to put in a new part of our fence in our backyard because we had one of our posts break because of the oversaturation of the ground. It just cracked off, and it's, I mean, it's an old fence anyway. It needed to be done, but, you know, we first world problems, we have it much better than a lot of people do. So not going to complain too much, Tony. Not going to complain at all. So we are in Studio B here in Omaha. We are back on, I'm out on my back deck here. We'll see if the ice cream man comes around again this week. Maybe we'll pick up some stuff here, and again, I'll ship it over to Tony in the CR there. But Tony, episode number 89. I was surprised. I only had three number 89s that I thought were worthy of being mentioned. All of them footballers, two tight ends, and a wide receiver.
I'll take a shot at the wide receiver. Let's go Steve Smith.
That is correct.
And now we are off to the tight ends. Let's see here. 89, tight end. Oh, boy. Was Jay Novacek?
Nope. Okay. I think it was 85.
Ah.
What?
Huh.
New York in the 80s.
Mark Bavaro.
There you go. The other one once fought a hurricane and won.
Jimmy Graham.
Nope.
Fought a hurricane and won.
He fought a hurricane and won.
Shoot, I'm not getting this one.
But what if the hurricane was named Ditka?
Ooh. Mike Ditka.
Mike Ditka. Yeah. Bears. So, thought you might catch that. So,
sorry, man.
It's all right. I had two tight ends and a wide receiver. I almost mistaken that with the two turntables and a microphone from back in the early 80s. So, episode 89, Tony and I were kind of thinking about what we should talk about, and we are really getting into leagues and camps, and we thought it would be a good thing, and I checked our list. I do have a spreadsheet with everything that we've talked about, Tony. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
No, I do. I do. I have a Google sheet with all of our episodes on it, and we have not talked about running. What it takes to run a good team camp, or what it takes to run a good league. I think they're kind of one and the same.
One and the same. Yeah.
And so that's what we're going to talk about this week. And if this is something that you have done and are still doing, maybe hopefully we'll have a few things that will be able to help you out. If you haven't, but you would like to, here's some thoughts that we have on it. Tony, I'm really passionate here. I'm going to start this week, if you don't mind. I am really, really passionate about one thing, that if you're going to run a good team camp or you're going to run a good league, there's one thing that I think is probably more important than anything else. Would you like for me to tell you?
Let's do it.
Start out, your number one thing, in my opinion, for what it's worth, the number one thing you should have is good officials.
I think I bet that's where you're going.
Yeah. And I don't mean this in, look, officiating is hard. I'm not saying that I would be a good official if I officiate. What I mean by that is You want to bring in the best officials that you can so the basketball can be as good as it can be. You have people paying to play at your place. And it's just like with your youth camps. The number one thing that you want that will make it easier for you to run your camp from year to year to year is to have people come back. And if you are going to have people pay, even on the low end, $150, $175 bucks for three or four games in a day, pay to have good officials come there and officiate for you. There is, for me, when I was coaching, there was nothing more frustrating, and it's nothing against those kids especially, but if you've got a couple of college kids with t-shirts on and they're doing it for some adult beverage money, I get it where they're coming from their perspective, but man, that was a big red flag for me, because I'm paying you good money. I want to make my team better, and I understand that you want to turn a profit, then charge me a little bit more to bring in good officials so the gameplay will be as good as it can be. Rant over. I'm jumping off my soapbox. There, I jumped off. What do you got, Tony?
I'll just kind of piggyback off what you said there. I think it's super, super important. I have not gone back to team camps because of bad officiating.
Yep.
You know, it's a situation where we go, the competition's really, really good, and nothing makes it more frustrating than you're going there and it's a top teams showdown type thing and you're getting kids hurt or kids are losing their poise because of the fact that they're getting mugged, if you will, and no call. And so I would 100% agree with that. Now, at the same time, I also want to say this and balance it out a little bit too. If you're going to get, you know, top officials and you want to also help to kind of mentor these younger officials, that's not a bad idea, but go three-man crew, put two really good ones in there with a rookie, and then help the rookie out and let the coaches know ahead of time, hey, I may have to call things out of my area, if you will, to help this person out, and you're going to hear me talk to them from time to time about where they should be positioning-wise and stuff like that. But yeah, I think good officials are at the top of the list.
I love that three-man crew idea, Tony. That's nails it. You know, and what we have to understand as coaches is we want our players to get better. We talk all the time on this podcast about making our players better, our coaches better. Guess what? Officials are trying to get better in the off season as well, and they want to help younger officials stay in the game with their officiating. And so I think that is a great laboratory situation for the officials as well. So I love what you had there, Tony.
I'll give you another one that I think also has to be involved in there is you want to keep the teams going. And I'm not talking playing back to back to back. That's not what I'm talking about. It's more about play, sit, play, sit, play. Not play, sit, sit, sit. Play again, sit for a couple more, and then play again. That's frustrating, especially if you're driving, say, for example, hour and a half, 2.5 hours away to play, and then all of a sudden you're sitting for all this time on top of it, and you're getting back really, really late. That's very, very frustrating. And so I think you want to keep your teams up and moving and keep them involved. You know, at most have them sit two in a row, but definitely not three or four games in a row. That's frustrating to have to do that. So keep those teams active where they play, sit, play, if you will. And I think that helps them because it keeps them involved. And again, a lot of times when you take a look at going to these team camps, you're going to be doing like an 18 or a 20-minute running half. And so, you know, it goes by pretty quick anyway.
Mm-hmm. I had the same thing, Tony. I use the word compact. Keep it compact for your teams in that regard. So yeah, I had that one as well. Along with that, Tony, you're talking about the schedule here. I always thought it was really important to get your schedule out as early as possible. If we had our shootout, let's say on June 15th, I would want to try to have as much of it settled. So when I was at Fort Calhoun, we had the ability to basically have a 16-team camp, okay? Mm-hmm. And what I wanted is I wanted to get everything out and have that schedule ready to go by about May 1st. Here it is. If you're Bob Smith and you're 2 hours away, you can get your kids lined up and let you know, hey, we're going to the Fort Calhoun camp. We live 2 hours away. Coach Plum is asking us to be there for a 10 o'clock game, so we need to leave here at 7:15 to make sure we're there at 9:15 so we can stretch and be ready to go by 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And so I think that getting that schedule to your coaches as early as possible, and then you can always tweak it. You can always, you know, and inevitably you'd have, it's a little bit different here in Nebraska than is Iowa, but hey, we've got these four girls leaving for volleyball that night. Is there any way we could get out by, you have us down leaving by 3 o'clock. Is there any way we could get out by 2 o'clock? Okay, well, let me flip this here and here. And then you're not rushing at the end with it as well. And you're not trying to do all of that in the last 3 days of the camp or before the camp. So get the schedule out early, and then along with scheduling, and believe me when I say this, inevitably, especially with a team camp, what you have to prepare yourself for is 24 hours before the camp, somebody calling you and saying, what, Tony?
We can't make it.
Yep. And so in the back of your mind, and this is, again, lessons learned, you have to be ready to shuffle that schedule around. And I've had to do, I think I had to do it once where I had, and I felt awful having to call a coach 24 hours before a camp. Hey, this and this and this just happened, and we went from 9 kids to 5 kids, and there's no way we could play 3 games. I'm really, really sorry. We can't make it. Keep our money, you know, type of a thing. And if you do that, tell them to keep your money. Don't ask for your money back. Tell them to keep your money. If you're going to bail 24 hours out, tell them to keep your money. But you, that's something as a scheduler you have to be ready for.
Yes, and then kind of staying in that same vein with schedule, the other thing I think that's very helpful is when you make your team camp form, your shootout form, whatever the case may be, put on there a list of what type of teams they want to play. You know, are you going to be a team that's, you know, a state tournament caliber team? Are you going to be a team that's pretty good in your conference? Are you a team that, you know, is rebuilding or whatever the case may be? And then what can happen is as you start to collect those forms, you can put those teams that are a like level against one another so that they're getting something out of it, because nothing worse going in and you're playing these large schools and you can't compete with them and you get blown out by 40 points, 2 or 3 out of the 4 games that you're playing, and that just does nobody any good. And the kids walk away beat up, not a good experience, low self-esteem and stuff like that. But if you can find, you know, if teams will be honest, and that's the other thing that's also challenging too, if teams will be honest and share with you where they really are in terms of their competitiveness level, then you can get them, you know, 2 or 3 really quality games out of the 4, and everybody walks away in a win-win situation.
Coaches, it is official. October 12th and 13th, Saturday and Sunday, October 12th and 13th, 2024, will be our first annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Retreat. It is going to be over 24 hours of just basketball coaching and getting yourself primed and ready for the upcoming season. We're going to do a lot of different things. Coach Flannery and the staff at Creighton University have been gracious enough to allow us to come in and watch them practice that day. We're going to have roundtable sessions with coaches that you're attending the clinic with, which is one of the best aspects of any A Pen and a Napkin event. We're going to have a full timeout situation score group discussion with the coaches that are attending, as well as coaches social, and then, of course, guest speakers. We got some great coaches lined up right now. We're probably going to be adding a couple of more here. It is going to be a great, great weekend here in Omaha. We'll be staying at the Holiday Inn Express at 87th and West Dodge Road here in Omaha, and it is really, really affordable. $200 for the weekend, and that includes food, that includes your lodging at the hotel, drinks, everything that goes into it, it is going to be included in that $200 for well over 24 hours worth of activities. If you're a commuter, if you're living in the Omaha area and you want to join in, but you don't want to stay at the hotel, it's $125. Think of that. That's literally, what, $5-6 an hour for an entire weekend of becoming a better coach. So coaches, I encourage you to sign up as soon as you can for the first annual A Pen and a Napkin Fall Coaches Retreat. What else you got, Tony?
That was kind of my one there with just that sheet, just filling out what level you're at. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's something that's important, because you want to go to these shootouts, you want to go to these team camps and play teams that are at your level. I think that's one of the nice things. We have a league here at Kennedy for our sophomore and freshman on Tuesday nights. And it's basically kind of the same size schools, if you will. And so you'll see where out of the eight teams that are in it, sometimes a team that's not that great, maybe they're, you know, 1-5 will knock off a team that's 5-0, you know, as far as things go. And so if you can get those types of things together, I just think that's a really big thing for the teams, because they get quality games in, they walk away, you know, feeling like they had a good experience. Maybe they, you know, maybe like that 1-5 team has lost 4 of their 5 games by 10 points or less, and they feel like they're getting better. I just think that's a good part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you try to market it. You never want to turn anybody away, but I think you do try to recruit good teams as well. You know, hey, you're playing West High in January. Hey, you know, Coach Smith, we'll be having a team camp in June. We'd love for you to bring your team over to it. You know, we're already planning that out and putting those little bugs in people's ear to let them know, hey, we want you to come here, and we're gonna. Not only that, we're going to try and, you know, you could tell Coach Smith, hey, I talked to Coach Johnson at No Shoot Tech High School, and they're coming. They're coming to our camp, and we can match you guys up. And all of a sudden, Coach Johnson's like, oh, hey, maybe that would be a good camp, because I know No Shoot Tech is going to be pretty good, you know. So I think those are that's something else that you can do. I think also another really, really important thing, again, lessons learned from mistakes, Tony. Make sure you have a very clear and defined set of rules and regulations for the camp or for your league. You know, here's how we're going to handle one-on-ones. Here's how we're going to handle timeouts. Print it off. Here's how we're going to handle parents. Here's how we're going to handle coaches. We let, you know, we're not going to let some Yahoo parent in the middle of June jump on some young official, and we got to kick out some parent out of a summer league game or something along those lines, you know. But have a definite list of rules, regulations, expectations, all of those different things. How long are halftimes? How long are timeouts going to be? Can you carry over? How are you going to handle overtimes? You know, so forth and so on. And I think that when you have that all written out, I think that helps alleviate a lot of issues as well. And it's worth making a bunch of extra copies of that so that everybody knows what's going on here at the Kennedy High sophomore league or whatever you're running.
Yeah, I agree with that. One of the things that we have with our league is that if a team were to have a tie, obviously look at head-to-head first, but if the head-to-head tie doesn't break it, then it's by point discrepancy. So the most that you can get is 15. So you don't have a team, you know, up 34 with late in the game and, man, let's blow them out by 40-some, because that gets our, you know, our point discrepancy even higher. So they max that at 15. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like you said, have those things, have those expectations clearly outlined so that as, you know, you get into those things that you know what's going on. And that was a deal last year that I was glad that we did, because we ended up tying with a team. We both had one loss. You know, sorry, there was a three-way tie. So we had three teams with just one loss. And so then you had to go to all these tiebreakers. And so, like you said, lesson learned, you want to have those things spelled out clearly so that when you run across them that, you know, you don't have people with hurt feelings. Oh, I didn't think through that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. What else you got, buddy?
You know, kind of going back to the official one a little bit, I think something that's important to have along those lines, you want to have a trainer on site. You know, and again, I'm not blaming the officials for kids getting hurt. Kids do get hurt, but you want to have a trainer on site so that if a sprained ankle happens, they can be taken care of. You know, they can get it taped, iced, whatever, so that if they want to be able to try to participate again, or if it's bad enough, then, you know, having a medical person look at them and then pass them on to, hey, I think you need to go back home and see your doctor. I think that's something, you know, it's going to be a little bit of an extra expense, but I think that's something that you want to have there, is to have a trainer there so that when injuries do happen, you know, it's not, you know, oh, sorry, coach, let me chase you down a bag of ice. You can point them in the direction of somebody who can help them out and give them sound advice.
Yeah, and especially in the world of litigation that we live in, that's a nice little safety net to have. And like you said, you have to spend a little bit more. So you got to pay a trainer $100-$120 to sit there for a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot cheaper than being sued for God only knows how much for whatever it may be. You know, so you know, kind of pick your poison, if you will, there. So. Along with that, Tony, I'm glad you brought up that support group. I think it's really important to take care of your workers, take care of your officials, take care of your trainers. You know, if you're having a one-day team camp, let's say, have a cooler full of Gatorade or waters or both for your officials and for your workers. Have some pizzas delivered to your school around lunchtime so that they can grab some stuff there. Just... It's eating into your profit margin, but those guys are going to be happier. They're going to come back. They're going to work hard for you. You know, a lot of times with your workers, if you're doing a high school team camp, you can hire your 6th and 7th grade feeder team kids or youth level players to run the scoreboard to keep, because you're not keeping track of you know timeouts exactly when they're taken or. All of those, it's very simple scorekeeping, and you're not stopping the clock, and there's not a lot of rules, interpretations, or anything like that. So you'd be amazed how happy kids will be to work your camp for 3 slices of pizza and a couple of Gatorades. And it gets them in the gym. It lets them know that they're appreciated. It lets them know that you're thinking about them. And they get to spend time around the high school program. So I really think that it's important to take care of, like I said, your workers, your officials, your trainers. You know, if you're making $100 less on your profit margin, but you know you're going to have those people back again next year to help you out, it just simplifies the whole doggone thing.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that you can kind of think of too, besides, you know, taking care of your workers and stuff, you can make a little bit of a profit margin off of other things too, whether you're charging to get in, because you can charge, you know, $5 for an adult for the entire day or whatever the case may be. You can open up your concession stand. You know, it might not have, you know, everything in the world as far as things go, but, you know, it's not hard to have some hot dogs or to have, you know, some Gatorade and water or whatever. And you can boost the price on that a little bit and make some profit that way. But I think you want to make sure you have a little bit of a concession stand there as well. And you know, and another thing that you can kind of do too, you know, whether you hand out medals or give t-shirts to the team that wins the camp, maybe you make it a competitive type thing. You know, if it's a shootout, a one-day shootout tournament style bracket play or whatever. And if you're doing a league, you could do that too. I don't know if I would necessarily go medals, might do more of the t-shirt thing.
Yeah.
But I think those are other things you can do to kind of separate yourself out from some of the other places that don't have those things.
Uh-huh. If I wanted to make more money at my camp, you know what I would do? I would set up a table and say, autographs from Tony Viss, $5 a piece.
Yeah. That'd be crickets and you get nobody.
Yeah, you brought it up, Tony, you know, t-shirts, medals, that type of thing. I think a lot of programs, yours and mine included, they see that, you know, this is a simple way to make a pretty decent amount of money in a very short amount of time. And so what are you going to do? What is the hook going to be for you to get people to your camp? How are you going to draw people in, like, or your league? You talked about t-shirts and medals, You know, one of the things that I've seen is, you know, people will do a little situation score tournament, or they'll do a 2 minute tournament or whatever. You know, play for 2 minutes, game tied, you know, different things like that. What we did at mine, and the kids really, they really liked it. They were always nervous at the beginning of it, but about 6 minutes into it, everybody started really getting into it. We called it Basketball Olympics, and what we brought all the teams together into the main gym, and we did four or five shooting contests between all the teams in the camp. So if we had 16 teams, I gave them a sheet as they walked in the door. No kid was allowed to participate in more than two events. And you know, we just did probably five shooting drills that we did. And some of it was really easy, like, you know, knockout. One person from each team, we're gonna play knockout here, or stuff like that. And you would be the kids really, really enjoyed cheering on their teammates. Maybe if it's a day where you're stinking and you're 0-3 or 0-4, but hey, you know, Mary won the knockout thing at the Fort Calhoun camp. That was really cool for that. So what's your hook going to be? How are you going to differentiate your camp from everybody else's camp and to help bring people in other than the play on the floor?
Yeah, I always enjoyed when we would go to Cornell in Mount Vernon for a camp there, then out of bounds tournament. And that was a lot of fun there. But like you said, just something to distinguish. And a lot of times those situational, like you mentioned, tie game, 2 minutes left, 10 seconds left, down one, you know, whatever. Just those situational out of bounds tournaments, I think, are a lot of fun. And kids, like you said, might be a little bit whatever, but once the ball gets passed in or thrown up in the air or whatever, however you start your situation, they kind of lose that. They get caught up into the competition side of it and really have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Tony, I've got two more things. What do you got?
Kind of going back through some things too with these, just the fact that as you take a look at these team camps, is making sure that you and your, you know, as the host of it, you have an opportunity to get around and to visit with the other coaches and the other teams that are there. I think that little special touch that you can provide as a good host goes back to them coming back. Hey, I just want to thank you guys for coming today. I hope you had a good time. I hope the games were competitive. The officials, you know, I hope they did a good job for you and different things like that. But I think if you can provide that type of extra touch there as well, I think that's something that they'll, you know, just to communicate your gratitude of them taking the time and spending their money to come to your camp.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And being a great host, I think that's so important. When I was out at Scutt and we hosted a JV league, and we had a night where a team didn't show up or there was a schedule snafu, and this one team ended up having to sit there for 2 hours in between games. It was supposed to be an hour, but they had to sit there for 2 hours, and I felt really, really bad for them. And I can't remember the exact circumstance. It might have been my fault or whatever. So I snuck out, and I went down to the grocery store, and I bought those teams some ice cream bars. And I bought that team ice cream bars. I brought them back. Hey, I'm really sorry. I know this doesn't make up for your lost time here, but while you're sitting here, here's some ice cream bars on me, you know? Mm-hmm. And those kids really, I think those kids really appreciated that token. And it's just a small thing. You know, you talked about that, Tony, and I think that's a great thing. I think also kind of building off of that, this popped into my head while you were talking. The day after, or a couple of days after, send each coach or a mass blast email to everybody that participated in your camp, you know, a thank you email. And along with that, you know, what did you like? Is there anything you didn't like? Was it good? Would you be interested in coming back next year? We'd love to have everybody back. You know, those type of things. And again, those small gestures of being a great host and then asking for feedback, I think is really, really good as well. So I love where you went there with that, Tony.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing you can kind of work with too, on that, if they're going to be there for a while, so like if they're going to play 3-4 games in a day, maybe work with some of your area businesses, you know, your Subways and different things like that, and see if they could offer, you know, hey, get a foot-long sub for a 6-inch price or something like that, and help them, you know, feel like they got a good deal and help out the area businesses get some business too. I think that might be something you could incorporate as well.
Yeah. we haven't talked about this, but this is really, really important when it comes to running a league or a team camp. You are trying to make some money off of this. Make sure you collect everybody's money. Make sure you have a system on a Google Sheet or something where you get your money collected. And I don't think anybody is necessarily trying to slip one by you or anything like that. I would never really accuse anybody of overt dishonesty. But have a plan to make sure that you've got the money part of it taken care of, and as soon as possible, get that deposited into your accounts, whether that's at the local bank or with your school, and your school's got a fundraising account or whatever the system is within your school. But man, take care of that money and don't put it in your backpack and think, oh, I'll get this taken care of in a couple of days. And maybe this is just me being paranoid with money, but I could not get that stuff deposited any sooner than possible. I wanted to get that done and taken care of, and just have that little weight off your shoulder of having to worry about, you know, taking care of that financial thing there. And so make sure that you've got everybody, you know, taking care of their business, you know, paying you to play at their camp. And however you work that out, that's up to you. It's not my circus, not my monkeys, but I think that's really important as well. It is part of the business, part of the event.
Yeah, and I think some of it's like having a policy in place, you know, and just make sure that you put a disclaimer on there. Hey, your money must be in before you play your first game or you will not play.
Yeah.
And I'd hate to have that happen to somebody, but at the same time, you don't want a team come in there, play three games, y'all get that check to you, and you never see that check.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. So I've got one more thing, Tony. What do you got?
I have one as well. My last one that I'll share with you is a little bit of like advertising and stuff like that. And I know you kind of touched on this earlier when you were talking about, you know, sending out, you know, we'd love to have you back next year. Is it something you want to do? But just making sure you have a little bit of publicity, a little bit of PR going on. And, you know, maybe it's like you talked about, a mass blast email. You know, whatever it may be, you could put it out there on X or some other social media type thing, but just make sure, hey, we've got a nice team camp here. We've got great facilities. You know, we have two or three paid officials, whatever the case may be. They're very quality. And then you could include some quotes from other coaches that have been at your camp to try to play it up a little bit. But I think that's an important part of it as well, because you want to keep repeat customers, but it's also not necessarily a bad thing to get some of those other schools out there that are elite teams. That, hey, we're going to have, you know, Bellevue West, and they're going to be preseason number one. Why don't you come and test yourself out against them? Or, you know, I think those are always good little synopses that you can have in there.
Yeah, and I think along with that, Tony, when you said that, that popped something else into my mind. If you're hosting it at your school, blast it out and invite the community to come in and watch you play. You know, especially like in a smaller community, and this is actually – I went up and worked Dick Junger's team camp up at Newell Fondo one summer. Worst officiating he's ever seen at one of his team camps. But you know, he put some stuff out there, and he had people coming in throughout the day to watch his teams play. And so when I went to Fort Calhoun, that was definitely something that we did. Was, hey, we wanted people coming in from around town. Hey, come in on your lunch break and watch us play, or do this, do that. And it's just a great way to extend your program out into the community as well. So last thing that I had, Tony, and I think this is really important. Make sure, and this seems so stupid, this seems so common sense, but again, you'd be surprised. Make sure you leave your facilities nicer than what you found it. Clean up after yourself. Make sure everything is put away the way that you found it. The job is not done until everything is put away and it's all done. The bathrooms are taken care of. Make it easier on your maintenance and janitorial staff so they don't have to come in and clean up your mess for an hour that night or the next day for stuff that you didn't get taken care of that is very easy for you to take care of. And so I think that is so very, very important. to leave it nicer. We if my players were here, if they had a nickel for every time that we said that, they'd have a lot of nickels. Leave it nicer than what you found it. And at the end of the day, you're tired, you're worn out. Just take care of that and get it done the right way so that you're not getting an email or a text from an administrator or whatever saying, Tony, look at this hot garbage that you left around here. This is a bunch of bull crap. We're not letting you do this next year unless you come in here. You know, just stuff like that. It's something that can easily be taken care of.
Yeah, you don't want to have that reputation. You know, you're doing your camp. It's a Sunday. And then they pop in on Monday, and whether it's PE or whether, I mean, may even be out of school, whatever the case may be. And the custodial staff's like, oh, crap, look what they did again. And now they have to clean up your mess. And like you said, Marty, I get you've been there for hours on end, and you want to get out of there as quick as you can. So you kind of halfway do it. No, make sure you take the time and do it properly. So that way, when you fill out whatever form it may be to host the camp again the next year, you don't have your administration or your custodial staff rolling their eyes, oh, crap, now we've got all this extra work because this guy never picks up after themselves.
Yep.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs, and now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details.
Well, Tony, you know who has never, ever, ever been asked to pick up after themselves, after they have left town, after the greatest show that city has ever seen?
Europe.
You're doggone right. Europe does it, and they do it right. That's what I'm talking about right there, buddy. So, Tony, are you ready for this week's trivia question?
Hopefully you do not test my Katy Perry video knowledge, but here we go.
That was such an atrocious question. I just don't know. No, I'm just kidding. So, we are taping this on Wednesday early evening. It is 5:47 according to my computer clock right now. It is on the eve of the NBA Finals. Mr. Viss, there will, of course, be some player that will be voted at the end of this series as the finals MVP. My question to you, how many players in NBA history have been voted NBA Finals MVP multiple times?
Let's go 10.
10 is incorrect.
Am I too high or low?
Too low.
Wow. 15.
Incorrect. Too high. You have one guess left.
12.
Ding, 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 ding. You are correct. Yes.
Wow.
And it counts. 12. Would you like to take
Let's
off?
Hear him.
Take it. Well, I'll let you guess.
Michael Jordan.
Yep. 6 times.
Magic.
3 times.
Bird.
Only twice.
Wow. Steph Curry.
Nope.
LeBron.
4 times.
Bill Russell.
The award did not start until 1969. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So who knows how many he would have had, but so, but yeah, that's a little loophole in it.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar / Lou Alcindor.
Only twice, but he is on the list. That was surprising to me.
Huh. That's five, right?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You got 7 more to go.
I'm gonna take my 5 and smile.
Shaquille O'Neal and okay. Tim Duncan, both with 3.
Okay.
And then with 2 apiece, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, Hakeem Olajuwon, and this one would have been pretty tough, Willis Reed.
Okay.
Yep. Huh. Yep. So pretty good list of players, though, Tony.
You could win a few games with those guys.
Yep. I would say that if Mel Allen had those guys on his bench, he would say,
how about that?
I'm getting pretty good at that.
You are. Yeah. You are. The segues are getting better.
Yeah, I do. I know. So we gave a very quick, stunted prediction of what we thought the NBA Finals would turn out. Tony, what did you say? I
took the Mavs in 6.
You said the Mavs in 6. I believe I said the Celtics in 6. I whatever I said last week, I'll stick by it.
Okay.
You know, but that's where I'm at here. That's where I was at. I think that's where I was. So, according to the poll on Twitter, it was pretty fascinating. A lot more evenly split. 109 votes.
Wow.
Boston, in 6 or 7 was the winner. 47% of people said Boston in 6 or 7. 40% said Dallas in 6 or 7. So about 87% of people said that this was going to be a 6 or 7 game series. 8% said Boston in 4 or 5. 5% said Dallas in 4 or 5. So I thought that was okay. Interesting, Tony. I think the prognostication is that everybody thinks this is going to be a really long series. Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I think, you know, if Porzingis plays well, I see it going 6 or 7. If Porzingis struggles, Al Horford's going to have to step up. But I don't know. I'm probably going to be the one that screws up Dallas. But I just see Dallas having played better competition than what Boston has. And then having the also trying to get Porzingis acclimated again. I don't know if the Celtics will play as well early as they may once he kind of finds his sea legs under him.
Uh-huh. So we've got it lined up here. Tony, did my little change there make sense? Did you see the arrow on there?
I did not.
Okay. Switching Derek White and Drew Holiday for their positions.
Okay.
Okay. So, so we have 9 categories that we are going to kind of say who's got the advantage, who's got the disadvantage, that type of there. All right. So starting with point guards, Luka versus Derek White. Who'd you have there, Tony?
I'm taking Luka. I think Luka is at least the second best player in the NBA. And I like Derek White a lot. I think him and Drew are your ultimate glue guys, if you will.
Yep.
They are stars in their role. But Luka is a really, really good player. And this is no knock on Derek White.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, if you, I agree with you. He is probably the second best player in the league. There are things that I personally don't like about Luka. However, I will never discount his talent. And goodness gracious, stays alive. Is he talented? He is so good. And so no knock against Derek White, but I'm taking Luka every day of the week and twice on Sunday there. So. Kyrie versus Drew Holiday. I'm going to take Drew Holiday. I think he brings more on the defensive end than Kyrie brings on the offensive end and the intangibles. And Kyrie has been on his best behavior for about a year and a half. But I, again, as a Celtics fan, just a bit scarred from the Kyrie Irving experience and the stuff that happened in Brooklyn. I know I don't have to worry about that with Drew, and I think you know, Kyrie might score a little bit, but I'm going to take Drew's all-around game over Kyrie's skill level. That's me.
I think Kyrie might be the most skilled guy in the NBA. And when you get Kyrie's behavior, you know, he's got a little bit of a redemption tour, kind of reinvigorating, if you will, his reputation.
And hats off to him.
Yes. And I mean, I think there's a little bit of a bias on your side. I'm going to go Kyrie, but I do agree with some things that you said. Yeah. I think that Drew's the better defensive player. Drew's probably the better teammate, but I just think Kyrie's an insanely talented player, and him, and when he can play that 1B option, the Robin to Luka's Batman or LeBron's Batman, I don't know of many players that fit better in that role than him. And I also would say Luka and Kyrie are both trying more so on the defensive end maybe than at any point in their history of their careers.
Yep. Okay. Small forwards, Jaylen Brown against Derrick Jones Jr.
It's not close. That's Jaylen Brown. When Jaylen Brown plays the way that he did, like in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Celtics are really, really tough. He's just super, super talented. If you can force him to go left and maybe take a little bit of advantage of that, but I think he's improved that aspect of his game. And then the other thing is his outside shot right now is really, really good. When they won game four, he was the guy that saved them in that. And so Jaylen Brown by a pretty good nod.
Yep. I agree. We can move on. So power forward, so to speak, PJ Washington versus Jason Tatum. I've got Jason Tatum. You know, he has not shot it well, but his defense is very good. His creation game has gotten much, much better as he's gotten older. He has not progressed into the MVP candidate that maybe some people saw him as a couple of years ago. However, though, I also think that he has probably taken a step back on some of those counting stats for the good of the team. And he's just more skilled. And he's just better than PJ Washington. I think PJ Washington's had a heck of a run. I think PJ Washington is a great fit next to Luka and Kyrie. He's definitely proven that over the last couple of months. But I'm taking Jason Tatum.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy one too. I go Jason Tatum. You know, the crazy thing, if you go back and compare Tatum's Eastern Conference final stats with Jaylen Brown's, Tatum might have actually had a little bit better numbers than what Brown did, and Brown ended up as the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And like you said, you know, Jason Tatum, you know, has had a really great start to his career, and I think has a ton of pressure on him, because if the Celtics don't win this, he's the one that's going to get a lot of fingers pointed at him. Yep. And I agree that PJ Washington played really, really well for Dallas in the playoffs, especially in the Minnesota series and also the series before that against Oklahoma City. But his ceiling is not at the same level as what Tatum's is.
Yep. The center position, and we kind of lumped this together, Lively and Gafford versus Horford and Porzingis. Who'd you pick here, Tony?
I'm going to go with the Dallas duo. The reason why I'm taking the Dallas duo is Porzingis, if he was healthy and had been playing and putting up the numbers that he had, I would probably go there. But we're talking about Porzingis after 5 weeks off, and you take a look at the Dallas duo with what Gafford and Lively do. Lively's plus minus is insane. The only one that he's trailing as a rookie is a plus minus is Manu Ginobili, who had a pretty decent NBA career.
Did all right.
And Gafford had a really strong Western Conference Finals. It's not by much, but I'm going to give the nod to the Dallas duo.
I went the other way. I have faith in the Boston medical staff. It's been 5.5 weeks I think Porzingis is going to be able to play for 4 to 7 games. And this could go with anybody. I mean, any of these guys could get injured at any time. I think it worked out really well that he got these extra 10 days off. I would have been a lot more worried about Porzingis if, let's say, the Indiana series goes to game 6 and they feel like they kind of have to rush him back, you know. I think he's going to be okay, and I think he's going to play. I think he's going to give something that the toughest series that Dallas had altogether was probably Oklahoma City. And what did Oklahoma City have? They had a stretch 5 that brought Gafford and Lively away from the basket and Chet Holmgren. And I think Porzingis is better than Holmgren, at least right now. And that's the one thing that they had trouble matching up with. And so I think I'm going to give the nod to the Boston duo there, Tony. So
okay. The only thing that, and maybe he was just being coy, but in his interview the other day, Porzingis did not give me confidence and a feeling that he was going to be at his best.
I did see that as well. I did see that as well, and I don't know. Maybe he's just a great Lithuanian actor. I don't know. So
could be.
So, who's got the better bench? I had Dallas.
Okay. I went Boston on this one. I think some of their pieces, like moving Horford back to the bench, I think is a nice piece for them.
That's a huge
Pritchard's
caveat.
Pritchard's pretty good. What's that?
That's a huge caveat. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yep. Peyton Pritchard's pretty good off that bench as well. I just think they have guys with their bench who come in and can do something and make plays, whether it's hitting a 3 or whatever the case might be. I would just give Boston a little bit of an edge off the bench.
See, I think the Dallas guys are playing better than the Boston guys off the bench. Like Hauser has struggled a little bit, didn't play very much in the Indiana series compared to what he had done earlier in the season. You know, that Jaden Hardy and Josh Green are giving the Mavericks pretty good minutes. Maxi Kleba is coming back. And again, what will he be? I think his injury was more serious than Porzingis's, long-term recovery. I don't know. I think I like Dallas's bench a little bit better. That's just me. So
okay. I just thought, like, Tim Hardaway Jr., yeah, has just been kind of spinning his wheels. Hasn't played great.
No, he has not either. So, coaching, I gave it to Jason Kidd. I think he's just more seasoned and experienced than Joe Mazz, and I think he's done a really good job with this team. I think both teams have a very clear identity, and I don't want to say that I think Joe Mazz has improved a lot from year one to year two. I think he's got a much better coaching staff around him, and don't underestimate that. But I think Jason Kidd's done a heck of a job.
I have to give it to Kidd as well. Last year he took a lot of bullets, if you will, with them not making the playoffs. And this year, as a 5 seed, and what he had to kind of, you know, navigate with some of the injuries and then the trade deadline moves and kind of getting those guys implemented and up to speed with the rest of the guys, I think Kidd's done a fantastic job. But I 100% agree with what you said. Joe Mazzulla's staff has gotten better around him, and he has made a lot of progress this season. But I would give it to Kidd.
Mm-hmm. Who's got the better home court advantage, Tony?
You know, playing in Boston is such a tough thing to do. But if you go back, the game that Boston has lost more times than not has been game 2, which the last time I checked is the 1 seed. It would always be hosting.
Yep.
But I'm going to go with Boston on this, even though, you know, they've won 5 games, 4 games, as far as their playoff run has gone. I'm going to go with Boston having the better home court advantage because those fans are very, very passionate.
I'm going to go Dallas just because, you know, Boston has struggled on their home court. You know, they've kind of gone on a little bit of a run lately. You know, they won 2 in a row against Indiana. You know, so they've won 3 home games in a row because they closed out Who'd they play in the second round? Cleveland. They closed them out, but they lost game two. At one point, like, the Celtics were 15-15 in their last 30 home games in the playoffs. I mean, just some crazy stat. I think Dallas just has a. I think they're just playing better at home. So
okay.
Most important category: who's got the better mascot? It's got to be the Celtics.
Oh, it's got to be the Celtics. I mean, when you think of the NBA, that's one of the iconic mascots is the leprechaun.
Yep. So, should be interesting. I've got Boston in six. Tony, you've got Dallas in six. How about we just agree? Whoever wins, the loser has to buy Arby's.
I like it. Now, is that so? We're no longer inviting Ty Lue.
Ty. I don't know if Ty can legally wager on this type. We've had enough professional athletes have struggle with wagering issues, so
okay.
I think we keep Ty out of it, just for Ty's sake. How about that?
Yeah, we don't need him to not be eligible to coach.
A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin Video Library.
Tony, let's dive in on something that's been around here. To me, it's a very nuanced thing. I think, all kidding aside, I think we're both pretty smart guys. But I think anything that we talk about here in the next few minutes, I think it's extremely nuanced, and we, you know, whatever happens, I don't think either one of us means to offend anybody or anything like that, but you know, we've talked a lot about Caitlin Clark. Are we at a point where, you know, where are we at, I guess, in the overall conversation with Caitlin Clark and the WNBA? And we had the flagrant foul against Chenity Carter the other day, and not on top of that. I don't know if you saw, Tony, the way the couple of people on the bench reacted.
Angel Reese being one.
Yeah, Angel Reese being one of them. The gal from South Carolina, I believe, had a...
Cardozo?
Cardozo had a reaction as well. Where are we at with the Caitlin Clark conversation? Are we talking about her too much? Is this just part of being in the league? What is it? Where are we at?
It's yes to both. You know how you talked about your fence post broke because of oversaturation in the ground?
Uh-huh.
That's where we are with this. It's been oversaturated. And so, yeah. And when you take a look at it, the Kennedy Carter shoulder check, if you will, that was beyond. In all honesty, I just think WNBA officiating is bad. I mean, if you've ever watched much of a game, that's one of the things that jumps out at you really, really early on, is how bad the WNBA officiating is. But it's like anything, Marty. If you go in as the hot new thing and you have people that are veterans that have been there for a while, they're not just going to bow down and let you ascend to the throne. They're going to fight like crazy to make sure that they keep themselves on top and keep you humble a little bit. Yeah. I don't know if she's experiencing a whole lot more rookie, I don't know if hazing is the right word that I'm looking for, than what any other rookie has gone through.
I think it's just kind of a welcome to the league type of a thing.
Exactly.
Maybe, you know?
Yep, exactly. It's like a high school team. You know, you've got your juniors and seniors that have been a while, that have been there, done that. You get this hot new freshman coming in there that thinks that they're, you know, gonna be their kingdom, if you will, and queendom maybe, and situation where they're going to fight like crazy for it. So, yeah, we've talked about her too much. The Kennedy Carter thing was cheap, but it's nothing more than what Larry Bird or Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan with the Jordan rules with the Pistons, with what they've experienced.
Do, you know, when you have these, and again, we'll see how Caitlin's career plays out. But right now, I'm going to use air quotes here, Tony, okay? Generational talent. The same way that people saw Magic and Larry coming into the league. Maybe, you know, people did, I don't think anybody saw what Michael Jordan was going to become, but it became very evident very quickly that this guy was uber talented. The players that have been around, and I think it's a great comparison to that era, because up until that point, and I think there's one other name that I'm going to throw in here as well, Tony, and I'll get to it here in just a second. Up until that point, the NBA was really struggling in the late 70s into the early 80s. And you know, drugs, lack of attendance, people didn't like the way the game was played, so forth and so on. And, you know, Bird, Magic, and then, you know, Michael took it and brought it to another level. And then you started getting into cable contracts and the marketing and all of those different things. And I, you know, the human instinct is to be jealous, but also at the same time, these players, these, and again, I'm going to use air quotes again, generational talents are also bringing things to you as a person that you have had the chance for 5, 6, 7, 10 years to bring, and it hasn't happened. Like in the WNBA, we're talking about teams finally flying charter consistently. The salary cap is going to go up. Expansion in the league is going to happen because of the interest in the league. And there's more talented players. It's just not Caitlin Clark or Cardoza or Angel Reese or Cameron Brink or anybody like that. It's probably been long overdue. But you also have to follow the business model. You know, so you envision that the salary cap is going to go up because the revenue is going to go up because the TV rights are going to go up. And those are going to benefit you. Much in the same way that before Jordan, before Bird, before Magic, we often forget that the first guy that kind of quote-unquote saved professional basketball was Julius Erving. And he came over from the ABA, and, you know, the rule was when Dr. J gets a breakaway, you just let him go because you're not going to injure him because he is the face of the league. He is the reason why people come out and watch us play. So let him go. And so is that argument, does that argument need to be made as well on the flip side?
I think so. You know, the thing with Caitlin, you know, cause you're talking about Julius and Michael and guys like that, just athletic freaks. And that's not her.
Correct.
She's very, very skilled, shoots it well, great vision, phenomenal passer. It's going to take her a little bit of time. You know, Kelsey Plum didn't go in and set the league on fire. Sabrina Ionescu didn't go in and set the league on fire. She's doing better than them. And again, Sabrina got, I think she played like 3 games her rookie year. But anyway, she's going to get there. She's going to be one of, if not the face of the league, but it's going to take her a little bit of time. The schedule makers did them no favors.
Absolutely.
I mean, you take a look at how many games they had to play in 20 days. It was crazy.
Criminal.
You know, and They've played really good teams for the most part. I mean, they played New York 3 times.
Yep.
And you know, and so they've been very, very challenged. And so hopefully as she's able to kind of get a break and get charged back up, because she just got done playing a really long college season on top of that, where she had to be the engine that drove that car all the time.
Yep.
And so but she, you know, and even with the whole Kennedy Carter thing, she's handled herself well.
Yeah,
you know, she does have 3 technicals. She's competitive, but you know, I know somebody one time when they first watched her said, "I think I saw the next Kobe Bryant with a ponytail." That's how competitive she is, and she's going to figure it out and play even better than what she already is. And she's playing pretty well as a rookie. She's one of the probably top 20 players in the league, but she's definitely not in the top 10, top 5.
No. You know who she reminds me of? The more and more I watch her play. The guy we spent time talking about 15 minutes ago, which was Luka. Very similar in my eyes, you know. Great shooters, court vision, run hot at officials. And again, if you watch the full thing of the Kennedy Carter thing, you know, the possession before, Caitlin was yipping at her. It looked like. And you know, 25 seconds later, again, I'm not excusing what Carter did. That had no place in anything. Okay, but you know, if you're Clark, you're running that fine line where it's like you can't let it get to you, but you also can't back down either. You know,
yeah, because the game before, she was chirping with a player from the Storm. They got into each other's face, and I think they ended up both getting a double technical.
Uh huh. So, you know, I think, you know, and there's other things, and you know, Angel Reese came out with her comments, and you know, people, you know, I'll play the villain if I need to, and those type of things, and I think that, I don't know, I think you're right, Tony. I love it's kind of ironic. I'm looking at my fence post right now. It's holding up my fence for one more night here. Until we get it demoed tomorrow, it is probably a saturation point, and just like with anything, you can have too much of a good thing, and I think you make a great point there, and I think this will all settle down. I think we'll get to a point in a year or so that we'll take a step back and realize, you know, again, part of this is the process. Some of it is not fair. Some of it is overblown. Some of it is properly blown up. And some of it is just, you know, again, be careful. Because of this person, you're also getting a lot of benefits as well. And maybe you don't like it. Maybe you don't want to admit that. Maybe you, maybe it frustrates you. But you also have to be smart in how you react to situations as well.
100%. And probably one of the best things I saw on it was there was a clip the other day. It's about 5.5 minutes. Kornheiser and Wilbon. Yep. Pardon the interruption.
Watch that.
It was a really, really good clip.
Yep. Real quick, Tony. The league is off and running. Something that people are not talking about at all is Connecticut Sun are undefeated. They're 8-0. I wrote this down yesterday. I don't know if they played or not, so I apologize if they got beat last night or if they won again. I don't know. I'm looking it up right now. You know, let's get our focus hopefully back on to the great play that's happening on the floor here. And yeah, they're 9-0. So my bad, 9-0, and they are outpacing the Liberty. They're outpacing the Aces now. Liberty are 8-2. Aces are 6-2, or I'm sorry, 4-2. They've played 6 total games here, so we're letting this team off to a great start, kind of slip through the cracks here.
Yeah, there haven't been many teams in WNBA that have gotten off to a start like this. And you go through and take a look, you know, Alyssa Thomas is almost a walking triple double. She's almost averaging a triple double for them. And then DeWanna Bonner, the ageless one, I think she's like 35 or something like that, putting up still really, really good numbers. Rihanna Jones, coming off an Achilles tear, is playing really well for them. And then Dejanay Carrington, and I'm trying to remember the other starter for them, but their five are all averaging double figures. And they are a really, really good team. And I hope people aren't sleeping on them, thinking the two super teams, New York and Las Vegas, are head and shoulders above them, because they're not. Connecticut's a big time threat to win the whole thing.
Well, they gave the Liberty all they could ask for in the semifinals last year. So this is not a team that's coming out of nowhere. They're talented. They've got cohesion. They've been together for a couple of years. And so keep an eye out for them. Keep an eye out for them. So.
And, you know, they lost Kurt Miller. He went to the Sparks, and they brought in Stephanie White. And it's just kind of more along the lines of a system, a culture, a program, if you will. They're just a very, very successful franchise.
Yep. Tony, anything to add on anything that we've talked about today?
I go back to where you started, Marty. I think that's probably the best thing is when you're going to run a league or a team camp, keep in mind the importance of officiating.
Yep. Great stuff here today. Episode 89, running a good team camp or league, however you'd like to apply it. A lot of really good ideas, good trivia, good discussion. Tony, enjoy watching the finals. We're going to drop this. We're taping this Wednesday night. Tony, I'm dropping it tomorrow because I want our finals predictions to be out there before the finals even start here. So,
because we might be on, is ESPN ABC is the one that has it, right?
Yes, I think so.
Because I think we might get a call to be on the finals coverage.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You haven't gotten that email yet?
I have not. I'll go double check, see if it got in spam.
See, my nephew gets married this weekend, so I've got to wait until games 3 and 4 in Dallas before I jump in. But yeah, I told him I had family obligations, so
okay.
So my daughter is rolling her eyes at me right now. So episode 89 in the books. Hopefully, folks have liked it. If you need anything from Tony and I, or I, you know how to get a hold of us. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.